Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. We're listening to Are You Going With Me, the great track off of the Pat Metheny Band's Off-Ramp CD. Lyle Mays, the keyboardist, who died here in Los Angeles at the age of 66 this morning. On Pat Metheny's website, said that his death was the result of recurring illness. Nearly 12-time Grammy-winning musician, composer, keyboardist Lyle Mays. It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Well, of course, we have the Iowa caucuses and the total meltdown there in the tabulation of the vote coming in from all the caucuses. Now, that wasn't run by public sector. It was run by the Democratic Party in Iowa. Nonetheless, it's further fuel for the public's concerns about election security and the competency in running elections. And with us to talk about that very topic, UC Irvine School of Law professor and election law specialist Richard L. Hassan. His book, Election Meltdown, Dirty Tricks, Distrust, and the Threat to American Democracy. Professor, it's good to have you with us again. Your timing is impeccable here.
Yeah, well, some people were joking that my publisher caused the app to fail in Iowa, but we had nothing to do with it.
That app is going to be used in Nevada, too, isn't it?
Well, they've now said that it's not going to be used, and it looks like they're going to roll out Scantron forms that people are going to be able to vote on for the early. They're still having caucuses, but they're having an early voting period, and you need to have a ranked choice. So you're listing your top, I think, four or five candidates. They were going to use an app for that. But now, rather than an app, people are going to vote with a number two pencil on a Scantron, like you would take the SAT, which seems like it would make sense, except rolling something new out 11 days before is worrisome because there will not be time to really test the system out.
And the Nevada primary, hugely important, coming after today's New Hampshire primaries, South Carolina coming up, Nevada, and then, of course, Super Tuesday. And we've got a lot of new stuff in L.A. County, throughout California, voting centers, like we'll talk about that. But let's talk just generally about the state of trust in elections. For a lot of different reasons, as you detail in your new book, the trust is wanting. What are the biggest areas of concern?
Well, it's true, and there was a recent NPR PBS Marist poll showing that large percentages of Americans do not have trust that their votes are going to be fairly and accurately counted. And that's really worrisome, because when you think about a democracy, it depends on us all agreeing of who the winners and losers are, and the losers saying, we fought a good fight, we'll fight another day. So I'm very concerned about trust. In the book Election Meltdown, I go through four reasons why I think trust is declining. One is laws passed mostly by Republican legislatures that make it harder for Democrats to vote in the name of trying to prevent voter fraud. And this convinces both Republicans and Democrats that the other side's trying to steal the election. Pockets of incompetence in how elections are run. And Iowa was a great example of that, even though, as you said, it was a party primary. A party caucus. We have problems in Detroit. We've had problems in Georgia. Democrats and Republicans, it happens all over the country in these pockets. And when there's a close election, the focus is there. The third problem are dirty tricks. And we saw that most prominently in 2016 with the Russians, but not only them. And one of the things I talk about in the book are Democrats in 2017 in an Alabama U.S. Senate race between Doug Jones and Roy Moore trying to do those same kind of things. And finally, an increasingly incendiary rhetoric about elections. We find not just Trump, but both Republicans and Democrats talk about elections being stolen or rigged. We even saw that with the Iowa caucus, where the president's campaign manager came out and said that it was being rigged without any evidence whatsoever. And these things together, I think, combine to undermine the public's confidence that votes are going to be able to be fairly and accurately counted.
Let's talk about technology. California is seeing a number of counties with new voting methods. Here in Los Angeles County, it's a brand new system that the county has spent years developing. It's going to be implemented at the voting centers as opposed to our local precincts that we're used to, little local polling places in someone's garage. What are your concerns about the new LA County systems?
Well, I would say anytime you're going to change the rules or change the mechanics of voting, there's going to be a learning curve. People are going to have to know, in this instance, that they have to go to a different place to vote, that there's a different time to vote, the whole interface is different. So in terms of how you're going to count, you're not going to use those Inkavote machines anymore, which we've been using ever since we got rid of those terrible punch card machines, you may remember, after the California recall in 2003. The good news is that they have been doing testing, and even though there are going to be fewer polling locations, now you'll have these vote centers, the people there will likely be much better trained because you're relying on a smaller number of people who are going to be doing this constantly over a period of 11 to 14 days. And so my advice would be not vote early and often, but vote early if you can, because that way you can avoid any last minute problems on election day.
Well, and it seems like also the move has been to try and, you know, push people, encourage people into doing vote by mail. And I wonder if this is going to have that effect.
Oh, I think so. I mean, already in California, we see, I think, more than half of voters use vote by mail. In other parts of California, people are actually now being automatically sent absentee ballots. And LA County is so big, they didn't do it here. But I expect that we'll see many more people decide, you know, rather than stop off at the vote center near my office, I might as well vote from home.
Yeah, for the first time I did it, because I loved going to my local voting place and seeing my neighbors. And it was a social thing. It was fun. But with a larger vote center where people are voting over a series of days, I figured I might as well vote by mail.
Yeah, although vote by mail is no perfect solution either, because, you know, lots of vote, I don't want to say lots, but compared to a ballot you cast in the polling place, you're much more likely to have a problem with a vote-by-mail ballot when you send it in because, you know, someone might think your signature doesn't match or there might be some other kind of issue. And so
one of
the good things about California is they'll let you know if your ballot was rejected for some kind of reason.
We're talking about voting security, about voting technology, and about the politics of voting as well. UC Irvine Law Professor Richard L. Hassan, author of Election Meltdown, Dirty Tricks, Distrust, and the Threat to American Democracy. If you'd like to talk about any of the issues that he's raised that are causes, as he sees it, for distrust of elections, concerns about the future of elections, we're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. You were talking about the efforts to, cull the voter rolls and Democrats being concerned that this is disenfranchising legitimate voters in some states. We had our own issue here in California where the legislature passed a law that was tossed by the courts, but would have required everyone running in the California primary to disclose, for the presidential nomination, to disclose taxes, which, of course, President Trump has refused to release his taxes, which would have had a chilling effect on Republicans turning out for the California primary before that getting tossed. So even there, you've got an odd twist where the legislature tried that.
Well, it's not just that which would affect, you know, say, Republicans down the ballot who might lose out. Because remember, we have a top two primary. And so Republicans need to turn out to vote in that, even though Donald Trump is uncontested, if they want to get their preferred candidates as one or two to run in the general, they need to turn out. But, you know, all kinds of other steps that are taken in California that increase the size of the electorate, that's kind of the flip side of voter suppression. I mean, sometimes it's being done in order to increase the size of the electorate in the hopes that those people will vote for Democrats. And so you remember we had a problem last time when we moved to this automatic voter registration
at
DMVs, where there was this giving the DMV more to do seems like a bad idea generally. I like the idea of trying to enfranchise everyone. I don't know that the DMV is the organization I would choose. And what ends up happening is some people were registered with the wrong party. Some people were not citizens and they weren't trying to register, but they were improperly registered.
Because it was opt out.
That's right. And this happened now in Illinois, same kind of thing, automatic voter registration through the DMV. And now some of these non-citizens look like they're in some legal trouble because it looks like they've tried to register to vote when they're not eligible to, and they're trying to explain it wasn't us, it was the state of Illinois that registered us.
Yeah, through no fault of their own. That's pretty cold.
Yes, right. So, but, you know, these kind of bureaucratic nightmares live on. So, in an ideal world, we'd have kind of the the same kind of system they have in most other advanced democracies like Australia or Canada or the UK. We'd have a national voting system. The machines would be the same everywhere. You'd have nonpartisan professionals running it. Everybody would be registered to vote when they turn 18, and the registration would follow with you your whole life. But we do this patchwork instead.
Well, I can think of a lot of problems with that, though, because if you have a successful effort to breach, it could have a whole national problem where you'd have to redo an election. Where if you've got a smaller jurisdiction that's breached, that's doing its own thing, you could contain a problem like that. The other thing is, it enables you to experiment with different systems. If a country of this size, which is many times the size of Australia, obviously, you're not going to have that experimentation and perhaps better ways of doing it being shown.
Sure. But, I think you have to balance that with the fact that, we don't run one election or even 50 elections. We run something like 8,000 or 9,000 elections. And the possibility of breaching a local county or sub-county unit is much higher than if we had a federal system where there was, the strength of the federal government behind it. That's why I say in Election Meltdown that we're only as strong as the weakest links in our system. Because if there's a very close race, as we saw in Florida in 2018, in the race between Rick Nelson and the race between Bill Nelson and Rick Scott to be U.S. Senator, focus went immediately in that very close race to Brenda Snipes and to other election administrators who had a record of incompetence and all the problems there, which tend to magnify it. The press and the parties and the candidates focus on these problems and they're just magnified. And I think everybody thinks the whole system is crashing, even when most election administrators are doing a pretty good job under limited budget constraints.
And you think that if the federal government was to run elections, they wouldn't be subject to the same sort of skepticism or questions about their motivations and competence?
Well, I think if we had a uniform system that was well-tested, remember, in a federal election, we're only talking about voting for a few offices, right? You're talking about the part that's voting for the president and the Senate and Congress.
Well, I thought you were talking, though, about the whole registration, everything being done at the federal
level.
Well,
we would have, I would have registration at that level. But I would conduct national elections with a national board, right? So it wouldn't necessarily be for state and local elections. So we'd have to have some kind of supplement for that.
And would they have the latitude to use their own technology and their own methods, or would they have to use would everybody have to use the same?
Well, I think what would happen, as we've seen in other efforts where the federal government says you have to do this in federal elections, is that the states just agree to go along with it. And I'm sure if there's funding to match it and every machine were the same, every type of machine were the same, that would actually be very useful. And I would suggest paper and pencil, hand-marked ballots, which can then be counted by hand, and there's much less of a chance of hacking that could actually affect the outcome.
That's
of
so
an election.
Retro, paper and pencil by hand.
It is hashtag hand-marked paper ballots is some. I would say I get more comments on Twitter about that topic than anything else, more than about vote suppression or anything else. That people are concerned about the machinery of counting the votes.
Even with a paper receipt.
Right. So with these new machines in LA County and in Georgia and in some other places, these new ballot marking devices, you vote on the touchscreen, it prints out a piece of paper, and it creates a barcode, and it's the barcode that's counted rather than the names. It'll still say, Larry Mantle for president on there, but when they're counting it, the computer is counting the barcode, which you can't read and tell if it's actually correct. And in some places like Georgia, it's the barcode rather than the name that would actually control the outcome.
Wait a minute. The receipt does not show you who you voted for?
Oh, it shows you. But the question is, what counts as your legal vote? And in Georgia, at least, it appears they're saying the legal vote is the barcode. If they were going to do a recount, they would just scan the barcodes again.
If it was inaccurate.
Well, we wouldn't know because we would only be looking at the barcode. That's why I think you need something that people can look at and say, I see what this name is and I can recount this. And that when you do an audit, which we think is good practice, it's got to be done where human beings can verify the vote. That's really important for transparency and for confidence in the process.
Yeah, barcode doesn't allow for that.
That's right. So we'll have a barcode in Los Angeles, but I believe that any recount and any post-election audit is going to look at the actual names on the ballot.
We're talking with UC Irvine law professor, election law specialist Richard L. Hassan, author of Election Meltdown, Dirty Tricks, Distrust, and the Threat to American Democracy. Patrick in Costa Mesa, you're on Air Talk.
Yeah, two quick things. One, the events with the caucus in Iowa have cast a lot of dispersions on the voting process, where we have Sanders with a lot more evidently votes, but fewer delegates than the other guy. And that breeds distrust. And the other thing that's created issues, and I know the professor is on this, is people believe that a lot of these machines are getting hacked. There was a fiasco in Florida between Wasserman Schultz and Tim Canova that was never resolved. There was never any hearings or anything on it. And there's a whole bunch of questions on whether or not the tabulation of the votes was done appropriately. And I just heard the professor's comments, so he's kind of dealing with it. But I was just looking for his feedback, because then there's a lot of us that feel that there really should be serious paper ballot trails on this stuff. I think there is.
Patrick, I appreciate it.
Well, on the second point first, we are seeing most places get rid of fully electronic machines, these so-called DRE machines. These were machines where you cast your ballot electronically and there's no way to verify it. So at least with the new BMD machines, there is a piece of paper. So that is useful. On the question of translating support into votes, I've got a lot of criticisms of the caucus system. I think it's exclusionary. I think it's difficult. But now we add on to it the fact that there are all kinds of election administration problems. People in the precincts had to report 36 numbers, according to a report in the New York Times. It's just too much to handle. I think we need to move to straight-up voting, get rid of the caucuses, and have each vote use a one-person, one-vote system rather than the convoluted system that they use.
But, of course, the parties, they do have the right to choose whatever they want, right?
Well, yes and no. So the Supreme Court has said that the parties have the right to decide what kind of primary, open primary, closed primary. But the court has also said that if a state wants to get rid of a caucus system and require the parties to use primaries, they can do that. And so I don't think Iowa would do that because they like their first-in-the-nation caucus system. Then they'd be fighting with New Hampshire over who would go first in the first primary. But I think, if I were the legislature in Nevada, for example, I would ditch the caucuses, if the parties wouldn't do it themselves.
All right. I didn't realize they had that latitude. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. We'll continue our conversation with Professor Rick Hassan, UC Irvine School of Law, back in just 1 minute. Professor Hassan will be talking about his new book, Election Meltdown, at the UC Irvine School of Law tomorrow at 5:30 in the afternoon. And then he's going to be at the Hammer Museum in Westwood on Wednesday evening, February 26th, just a couple of weeks away. Both events are free and open to the public, and we have a link to both of them on our AirTalk page at kpecc.org. UC Irvine Law Professor Richard L. Hassan, author of Election Meltdown, Dirty Tricks, Distrust, and the Threat to American Democracy. We're taking your calls at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Where is the Supreme Court standing on a lot of these concerns about voting practices, gerrymandering, or some prefer gerrymandering? Where's the court setting up its stance?
Well, you remember that the probably the most famous intervention of the courts in the election process was in 2000 in the Bush versus Gore case, which essentially ended the recount in Florida and handed the presidency to George W. Bush. But of course, the courts weighed in other areas, as you said. In the area of redistricting, the Supreme Court said in 2019 in the Rucho versus Common Cause case that federal courts are closed now to claims of partisan gerrymandering, but they still deal with claims of racial gerrymandering. They still deal with voting rights claims. They still deal with one person, one vote claims. And one of the issues that I'll be watching after the next census is what the denominator is. Can you draw districts of equal numbers of voters rather than equal numbers of people, which some states are talking about doing? And if they did that, it would shift powers from diverse Democratic cities to white rural areas where there are fewer non-citizens and children. So there's a lot where the Supreme Court could potentially get involved. And of course,
this is not clear, right, constitutionally.
That's right. It's an open question. The court, in a case called Evanwell versus Abbott, said it's an open question whether or not states could use a different denominator. And, what's different now between 2000 is now all the conservatives on the court have been appointed by Republican presidents, and all the liberals have been appointed by Democratic presidents. And so it's very common now, or much more common now, for people to talk about the Republican majority on the Supreme Court. And so if there's a close election and the court has to decide some election dispute between Trump and his Democratic opponent. Well, you know, if the court divides 5-4 Republicans against Democrats, I think that's not only going to cast clouds over legitimacy of the election process, but also over the Supreme Court itself.
And whether they're unbiased in making that assessment.
Right. And even if it's not conscious bias, because I think in Bush versus Gore, we saw that, you know, you tend to see things as motivated reasoning. You tend to see things through the lens that kind of supports your position subconsciously. And I think that's true of judges as well as everyone else.
Bill in North Hollywood, you're on Air Talk with Professor Hassan.
Yeah, hi. The official sample ballot mail that was sent to us, and the voting instructions for the ballot marking device is very confusing. I have no idea really how to use it. They have pictures here, but the pictures really are not helpful.
Bill, I appreciate it. Professor Hassan, you know, not having anything to do with running the L.A. County elections, but there's something we do hear about consistently that people find it difficult to understand directions for this.
Well, yes, you remember that all those people in Florida who voted twice because they thought, some of them thought they were voting for the president and the vice president, or there were instructions that said vote on every page in one county.
It's the butterfly ballot.
Well, that wasn't the butterfly ballot. This was in Duval County. The sample ballot said vote every page, and the president. There were so many presidential candidates, people voted on every page and voted for two presidential candidates. And so this stuff matters. This is why I was saying about voting early, because you can go to these voting centers. Some of them will be open a couple of weeks before the election. You can check out the machines, and hopefully there'll be more time. And you know, they're meant to be user friendly. They have different languages. They have disability accommodations. They're really, they've been designed for about a decade in Los Angeles to try to make them a friendly user experience. But it's the first election we're doing this. There's going to be lines. There's going to be a learning curve associated with using the new machines.
All right. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. The city of Beverly Hills has filed a lawsuit against L.A. County and the registrar because the new machines can only display four candidates at a time on the opening screen. So you have to, I guess, hit a button to scroll down to additional candidates. So the thought is it disadvantages people that are farther down the ballot. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, there is some conflicted social science evidence that being first on the ballot helps. And this is the so-called ballot order effect. It's why in California the names of candidates are randomly drawn and then rotated across the state to make sure that no one gets an advantage. I think the key issue with this lawsuit is just over the interface on the screen about whether you can actually cast a vote for a particular race if there's more than four candidates running without scrolling through all of the choices. And so I think these are the kind of things, regardless of how the lawsuit comes out, these are the kind of things that LA County is going to have to look at and see if the machines need to be reprogrammed for the next election to make sure that people understand what their choices are and see the full range of choices before they cast their ballot.
So one of the big things apparently that LA wants to do is make sure that everybody, whether there's some access issue or not, uses the same system, which, of course, creates trade-offs then for what is the typical user versus the one who's using the accessibility functions.
That's right. So in the past, there would be one accessible machine at least per precinct. And now here, these are machines that could be used by everybody. And it is a trade-off, just like, you know, the question about security versus access is a trade-off. Absentee ballots. It's very rare to have fraud in elections, as I explain in the book Election Meltdown. But when it does happen, it tends to happen with absentee ballots, which can be stolen or altered. Then again, they're really convenient. Millions of Californians like to vote with them. And so you have to make choices, trade-offs about what's the best voting system to have. There's no one right answer.
There is no perfect system, that's for sure. Professor, always a pleasure. Thank you. I hope we'll get a chance to talk with you multiple times before the November election. Thanks so much.
I would look forward to that.
Thank you. UC Irvine Law Professor Richard L. Hassan, Election Meltdown, Dirty Tricks, Distrust, the Threat to American Democracy. We have two speaking engagements locally with him. Tomorrow afternoon, UC Irvine School of Law. We have a link with information on that. And then coming up in about 2 weeks, he'll be at the Hammer Museum in Westwood. All the info as kpcc.org/airtalk and look for this segment. Coming up, we'll talk about the very latest controversy in Major League Baseball. What's going on with baseball? Yet another one to talk about. We'll continue in a moment.